Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We have reached high noon here in Nashville. Second half of the show. Darren Donick and Chase. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe. Broadcasting from our homes. Marquise Munson holding it down at the studio. Chiming in as well. Dan Graziano from ESPN has joined us once again. We're glad to have him back on the show. We have talked a little baseball today. We've talked a little hockey. Now we turn our attention to football as the big news throughout the league the last couple of days, of course, the signing of Cam Newton by the New England Patriots, and especially here in an AFC town, if you will. That was big news in terms of what it does to the dynamics of that conference. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us again.
My pleasure, guys. How are you?
We're hanging in there. So your thoughts, I mean, it's nice to sink our teeth into a story like that, a signing. I guess we were all waiting to see where Cam Newton ended up. So what does it do in your mind to the AFC picture? How much of an impact can he possibly make?
I think his impact could be significant, assuming that, you know, he's healthy and he looks like his old self. But the reason we were waiting so long for him to sign is because teams couldn't convince themselves that he was. So it's a low-risk, high-reward situation for the Patriots. He could be getting maybe the highest impact signing of the entire offseason if you have a fully healthy Cam Newton. And you could also be in a situation where, you know, if he's not healthy enough, if the foot doesn't check out, right, if the shoulder becomes a problem again, he could be a guy that doesn't even make your team. So I think it's a wide range of outcomes, but certainly the potential high end of that range justifies what it appears to be a very low expenditure on the part of the Patriots.
That makes a lot of sense. And with that in mind, the range that could happen, you have to prepare yourselves, and we know the Patriots prepare. That's what they do. But how much, in terms of maybe an offensive philosophy, will they commit to Cam Newton to try to fit his strengths? I mean, he is certainly a guy that's got a unique skill set. And, of course, you ask yourself the question, can he still do those types of things? So how do you think they'll handle that part of it systematically?
I think their system will probably stay the same. I mean, it's worked, obviously, with Josh McDaniels there running the offense for a very long time. I think a lot of Newton's success there will depend on, you know, the way he learns and processes that system. But, you know, they are smart coaches, and they will tailor the offense to accentuate the strength of whoever's running it. And if you have Cam Newton in there, if you have a fully healthy Cam Newton in there, you know, you'd be silly not to incorporate quarterback goal line runs, right? Or you know, ways to get him on the move, or, you know, play action stuff that accentuates his arm strength, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think that the Patriots, if Cam Newton is the starter, which I think if healthy he will be, I think they'll spend training camp sort of getting to know each other. And within the confines of what McDaniels does, they'll find ways for Newton to flourish.
How much do you think the Patriots were able to get information on his health? You know, how do they do that? Because we've been talking about it here for a long time, Dan, about Jadeveon Clowney and how much of his, you know, sitting around and waiting has to do with, you know, you'd like to maybe have some more information on the doctor material. You'd like to have him in for a physical, that kind of thing. How much do you think the Patriots were able to get on Cam's situation?
Yeah, I don't know exactly for sure yet. Obviously, that's still a question that we're trying to get answered, but I know some free agents have signed, and the team has set up physicals for them with sort of a team-approved doctor near their homes, right? So let's say you live in California and you sign with the Packers. This is a hypothetical. I don't know if the Packers are doing it this way. They reach out to a doctor near where you live. They set you up. They say, get over there and get your physical, and the doctor will send us the results, and then that deal can be official and finalized. So the physical for Cam, my understanding is, hasn't happened yet, and the deal is obviously contingent on it. But you know, the layout here, I mean, if it's really a minimum salary or close to a minimum salary plus incentives, you know, you don't necessarily need to convince yourself of the health because, again, if he turns out not to be healthy, maybe there's a provision in the agreement that allows you to scuttle the deal completely, and certainly even if not, he gets to training camp and get hurt again, you're not out very much money. So I think that they've obviously been able to convince themselves through conversations with Cam and his representatives and possibly Cam's doctors that that it's at least worth taking a shot. And then from there, they'll figure it out once they can get their own doctor or their own affiliated doctor to take a look at him firsthand.
Dan Graziano of ESPN is with us. So is your belief that it's going to be training camp with Jadeveon Clowney? And do you have a favorite still, or did you ever have a favorite with him and where he might end up?
I always thought from the beginning that he'd go back to Seattle because they really liked him. They just didn't like the price he was setting at the beginning of free agency. So figured the demands would come down and they'd work something out. But, you know, the longer it goes, the more you think, you know, that's maybe not the likely outcome. So with Clowney, my understanding is that, you know, he'll wait. He wants to wait until he gets something like the deal he is looking for. And there are some moving parts in the pass rusher market that still could affect it, right? Like if the Jaguars have to trade Yannick Ngakoue, and there are teams that are waiting to see whether they get him, and then, you know, the deal gets done, and now the teams that didn't get him, maybe they get a little more desperate for Clowney, right? And I'm not saying, I'm not comparing the two players, but like if you're still looking for an edge rusher guy, and let's say an Ngakoue trade is your first choice, and you don't get it, maybe that makes you more interested in talking to Clowney at a number that appeals to him. So in an offseason where no one had to be anywhere yet, and we don't know what's going to happen, it seems like Clowney, who's made quite a bit of money in the NFL, the former number one overall pick, is content to wait it out. And instead of taking the best deal that's available to him now, wants to see how good a deal he can still get, knowing that there are factors that could work in his favor. So, you know, we've heard obviously Tennessee, we've heard Cleveland, we've heard a lot of teams associated with Clowney throughout the offseason. At this point, very hard to handicap because whatever anyone's offered has not been enough to convince him, and nothing has really happened over the last month or so to change that.
Somebody we really liked and got to know during his time here in Nashville is Logan Ryan, and we just haven't heard anything related to him in a long time. I know the Jets, it was rumored for a while, but that never happened. Mm-hmm. He's still a free agent. Why do you think that is, and where do you have any indication of where he might end up?
No, the when I've asked that question of teams, you know, executives of teams, why wouldn't this guy be signed yet? They tend to say it's a price issue, that maybe he views himself as a cornerback who can play on the outside and should be paid like that, whereas a lot of teams probably view him better as a slot corner, and obviously there's some difference between what slot corners make and what, you know, the premier outside corners make. So Ryan is in a situation somewhat similar to Clowney, where rather than just sort of take the best thing that's been offered, he continues to wait it out and insist that he knows what he's worth and hopes that someone will come closer to that before it's all said and done. And if that doesn't happen by whatever your date is, right, training camp, regular season, week five, whatever you've decided your drop-dead date is, then you have to assess and say, okay, well, who's offering what, and do I take it, or do I sit out, or do I retire? I have no idea, but I think my understanding is that he's in a similar situation to Clowney, where his number is one that the teams haven't agreed with, and rather than just sort of say, okay, fine, he continues to wait and believe and hope that someone's situation will change to the point where they do offer him something closer to his number.
Something that we've discussed a lot is, you know, when you look at the AFC, Baltimore, Kansas City, to me, will be 1 and 2 in some particular order. We'll have to let that play out. But those two teams are at the top. But then the question is, what team comes in at number 3? And of course, here we have the debate of, well, why not the Titans? Could it be the Titans? Are right. The Titans better enough to be at that position? So how would you answer that question of the team that comes in at number 3?
Certainly would put them in the mix because we have uncertainty about New England now, right? And, you know, Buffalo, I think, looks like a team on the come, and they could certainly be in that conversation. The AFC South, to me, is difficult to sort out because you have you know, the Colts, I think, if Phillip Rivers has anything left in the tank, could really flourish with better quarterback play, right? And the Texans, obviously, we can, you know, we can look at what Bill O'Brien's done and, you know, wonder what he's thinking, et cetera. But they do win the division kind of all the time, right, 4 out of the last 5 years. So it's hard to write them off. And then in the North, very strong. I think, you know, not just Baltimore, but with Roethlisberger coming back, Pittsburgh should be a factor. Cleveland should be better this year. So I think the AFC is a jumble. I don't have any issue with someone saying Baltimore and Kansas City are look like they're at the top. I mean, on paper, I think they both do. But if you're Tennessee and you're going to get the same kind of, you know, productivity out of Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry as you did last year, I think you have every right to call yourselves a contender and you know, for a division and possibly that three spot. But remember now, the demarcation line is different. It's not, you know, 2 versus 3. Like, the only bye is going to be the one seed in each conference. So being 3 versus being number 2 doesn't necessarily make the difference that it used to.
Yeah, when we had the conversation earlier and I filled out my 7 teams out of the AFC on June 30th, which I know is just asking for it, but I did that based on just to have the conversation. 6 and 7 was tough for me. Just right now, figuring out those teams that are going to fall in 6 and 7, I had Indy and Cleveland, and I'm like, I don't know if I feel great about that because of what you just said about Rivers, and then Cleveland is Cleveland.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, again, it's Cleveland should be, well, you know, at some point, right? I mean, Charlie Brown's going to kick that football before Lucy yanks it away, right? Like that,
right.
Cleveland should be good, and we keep saying this, and they have all the talent to be a contending team. They believed coming into the offseason that they needed to obviously change the coaching staff, and what they had last year didn't work, and calm everything down as a result of that, and fix the tackle position. So signing Jack Conklin in free agency and then drafting the Alabama kid whose name escapes me, is it Wills? Jedrick Wills. They feel like they might have fixed their tackle position. So if they did, and Kevin Stefanski is a coach that can, you know, manage them through a season better than Freddie Kitchens did, then they don't feel like they're far off. So I think they deserve to be considered a contender. I do think they're in a very tough division. I think Cincinnati will be improved. So I think that'll be a tough division to sort of win a pile of games. I don't know. Baltimore winning 14 again seems far-fetched. But, I think there's 3 in the AFC South you'd have to consider, 3 in the North you'd have to consider, 2 in the East you'd have to consider, and then I guess depending on what you think about the Chargers and the Broncos, there could be 1 or 2 or 3 in the West. So AFC, a big jumble. It'll be good for the AFC that they went to 7 playoff teams.
Dan Graziano from ESPN here with us talking football. Dan, as we let you go, fair penalty for the Patriots based on repeat offender status, what they did exactly in the Bengals game in terms of the filming? Do you think the penalty was just?
Yeah, that's an interesting one because it was a little bit harsher than I thought it was going to be. I mean, to dock them a pick and to fine them more than they got fined for the original Spygate back, 12, 13 years ago, I think surprised me a little bit. So it's obviously, I think the league was trying to say we're taking this seriously, but I don't think they're saying, you know, this was Belichick ordering this or anything. So I think they're trying to walk a line between assigning blame at the very top of the organization, but also sending the message that this is totally unacceptable behavior. So docking them a draft, I mean, a third round pick's not nothing. I think it's a significant punishment. And I think it's, you know, it probably is more significant than it would have been for a team that didn't have New England's history with vaguely similar stuff. And I think because of that, that's fair. I think they, you know, if escalating discipline, even if it's not apples to apples in terms of what they've done before, I think if you're the Patriots and if you're a clear thinking Patriots fan, you have to admit that, hey, our history isn't the best here. And I can understand why they would come down hard on us.
Dan, you're doing a great job on the Get Up. I've gotten into the routine. We're doing our shows from home now, so I'm leading up to our show. I'm always checking to see what you guys are doing. You guys have adjusted very, very well. Thanks a lot for joining us for a few minutes today.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me.
All right. Dan Graziano from ESPN NFL Insider. When we come back, we'll continue to talk to some of these issues here. I want to ask the question to Chase and Marquise. Do you think the penalty, the punishment was just for the Patriots? Do you have any sympathy for the Patriots? Probably not. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay tuned. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game. We continue. Darren Donick and Chase. So, as has been sort of thrown out there, the old trick, right? You time the stories. You announce or leak out that Cam Newton is going to sign with the Patriots at the same time the league announces more punishment for the Patriots. You know, Patriots fans have been through this, right? They've dealt with it. Here we go again. You know, they've got their rationalization for everything that they've done. And there's others that, you know, just like any great team, you know, you love to pile on. Here's the next chapter in the ongoing, the Patriots are always up to something. But it is interesting how these things keep coming up. We were aware of it last year. It was going on. You heard Dan Graziano say he was a little bit surprised that the penalty was as harsh as it was. I mean, just take the real impact is the third round pick, right? Everything else, the money,
right?
You know, fine. But a third round pick can be a very good player. We know that. So that's the legit punishment. So do you think that was based on what happened? I do, because when you are a repeat offender, it should start to compile higher penalties, even though what they did may not seem that significant.
Yeah, and I think at this point that what you just said, it may not seem that significant, and maybe it wasn't. But at this point, because you have been a repeat offender and you've gotten your hand caught in the cookie jar time after time after time, that you don't really get the benefit of the doubt anymore. You've lost that right. Now you're at the point where you can't really say, well, hey, no, I didn't know. We didn't know they were doing that. That's a separate thing. You don't really get to do that now, because chances are you probably did know. And now you've just gotten caught again. Nobody's going to sit there and go, well, you know, I think the Patriots and Belichick are telling the truth. Because people that have done that before, they've been burnt because they've been caught. So I think it's fair. Clearly it's hurt them in the past to have that type of punishment. So I think they'll be fine, and it's just they got to take their punishment and deal with it. But I didn't really have a problem with it. I thought the timing of the Cam Newton signing was hilarious and such a Belichick thing to do, but because he knew it was coming. But at the end of the day, it is what it is with the punishment, and I think they got it right.
But what's funny is, do they really think we won't have time to talk about it? We have time to talk about a lot of things right
sure.
now. There are no games going on. So we will get to both. You know, we can do two things at one time, you know, talk about Cam Newton and the punishment. But what it does more than anything is, besides the actual punishment of a third-round pick taken away, is it just continues to fuel the reputation. And at this point, I guess the Patriots take it as a badge of honor, right? I don't know. Let's just take 30 years from now, when people look back on the dynasty, how much of this will be part of the story, right? How much will it cloud the greatness of the team? I think that's what I would be concerned about if I'm Bill Belichick, especially because Bill Belichick is the one what is the only thing that he loves talking about? What is the only engaging thing that he likes to talk about and really put his heart and soul into what he says? It's the history of the game.
Yeah.
Right? When you see him on the NFL Network talking about the NFL's top 100 players or who were the coaches that changed the game and, you know, studying what made defenses great or what made offenses great, innovations, all of that, that is where he is fantastic. So wouldn't it be ironic? I mean, that if I were him, I would be very concerned about, you know, the next Bill Belichick, whoever that is, in the person that is going back and saying, remember the 2000s? Remember how great the Patriots were? Well, isn't it a shame that they had this, and this happened? They lost the first-round pick here. They had the spy gate there. Tom Brady was suspended for 4 games over here. That would concern me, but evidently it doesn't. for the real Bill Belichick.
It'd be helpful if I had my mic on. And he does. He loves the history of the game, but that's going to be. I was just thinking about this while you were talking of the legacy part, and I'm not really. I mean, it's going to be a part of his story that the Spygate or this or that, whatever. But I'm not going to let it really affect. I mean, the guy won six Super Bowls, or that's the number now. As a head coach, I mean, he did some tremendous things. Now, the legacy part could change if it just flames out, you know, post Brady, or for Brady it flames out post Belichick, because then you're going to go, well, yeah, but they needed each other. So that and that's the part of the story that we're waiting to see how that turns out. But I mean, this stuff doesn't necessarily. I kind of laugh and shake my head at this point.
So you don't think this changes it from what it was before? If this had never happened, you don't think it changes what the legacy, how we'll think in 20, but it is another chapter to it. You know, it solidifies, I think, whatever you have in your mind with it, because I have thought, like, I'll give you the example, and I've used this example before. The 2003 Titans were a really good team. MVP Steve McNair.
Yep.
Right? They lose the real frigid game in Foxborough. Could have gone either way. You know, 17-14, brutally cold weather, 4 degrees or whatever with the wind chill. You know, just ridiculous. But that was a toe-to-toe game that absolutely could have gone either way. And the Patriots went on and won the Super Bowl. They won it. They beat the Panthers. And that was the year that, you know, that was a year where this was starting to come to light. The Spygate, all of the things, the walkthrough at the Super Bowl a couple years prior to that. Have I wondered in my mind, did the Patriots have something up their sleeves that night that helped them in a game that was that tight? I've wondered that. I don't know. But that's what happens when you do get caught a couple of times, right?
Right. Isn't that the story of the fire alarm going off? At the Titans Hotel?
Well, that was one. And then there was another question about the footballs. That was the early days of the K-ball, right? The kickers had to kick a brand-new football every time. They were trying to make it a little tougher to kick field goals. And so there were questions of, you know, did they have a way of warming up the ball or, you know, and of course, years later, the Deflategate. Who knows if they were doing that before? These are always the things that you wonder. What little competitive edges were they finding back in those days that we'll never know about?
Right.
And I think anybody who lost a tight game to the Patriots in the last 15 or 20 years, you easily could wonder about it. You may never find out. You're not going to go back and investigate it. But that thought is in your mind.
Do we really think the Deflategate, I mean, at the end of the day, was that a big deal? Did that really make a big difference? I feel like that was one of those things that, because they were the Patriots and they had already been caught on other things, that it got blown out of proportion a little bit. And it was made to be a bigger deal than it actually was.
But who made it a bigger deal? If they had come out and said, yeah, you got us. You know, we deflated the football.
Yeah, well, deny,
you
know, deny,
if they'd come clean with everything and said, yeah, we broke the rules here. You know, put it back on the league. All right, what are you going to do to us? You're going to forfeit the game because we did that? I think that would have been interesting. But they went to these great lengths to try to disprove what was being thrown out there, and that only added fuel to the fire because of the reputation, right? And then the secrecy of Tom Brady about the whole thing, all of that. I think it's a great question that you're asking, right? What difference really did it make if the balls were a little bit more inflated? It might have made a little bit of difference, but would it have changed the outcome of the game? Probably not. But when you have an intent to cheat, that's part of it too, right? If you're knowingly scheming to break the rules, that in and of itself is significant, even if it's not going to, on its own, tip the scales that much in your favor. Otherwise, why would you do it, right? Why the secrecy?
Well, that's where their arrogance got them. You know, I think there was a little bit of, We're the Patriots. Look at us. I mean, we're at the top of the mountain. Whatever. So we don't have as much air in some footballs, so Tom can grip it. Yeah, whatever. And they thought they maybe thought that they could get away with it, and they could deny, and the league didn't let up because of the pass. And I think that that's where the pass comes to haunt them, and so it backfired on them. But how many times have we seen a story where the cover up or denying something, you know, that makes it much worse, Bruce Pearl, than it really should have been. I mean, you know, that's in our state, that is a prime example. Bruce Pearl ends up losing his job at Tennessee because of the cover up part and not the crime itself. And so, yeah, I mean, you make a very good point of that with the Patriots, but I know it's a part of the legacy. It's a part of the story. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not condoning anything by any means, but at the end of the day, I think that you're going to look back at the Patriots and look back at Belichick and recognize just the championships and the achievements more than you will the cheating. But the cheating will be a part of it for sure.
Someday.
That'll be a good book.
Well, I was thinking 30 for 30. Right. Someday, you know, if you wanted to, you could do a 10-part series and you got to have some time go by. Right. You got to put it in the backdrop a little bit. You need to have people that aren't willing to say anything now that maybe when enough time goes by, they'll say, you know what? I have some secrets here. I can document it. Here's what I'm going to say. Because at that point, who knows, you know, what's anybody going to do about it at that point? But the Last Dance was compelling partially because of the story, but also the right amount of time had gone by, right? And you have a new audience that either didn't experience it at the time or were looking back nostalgic-wise. So someday, maybe it's 10 or 15 years from now, the 10-part series on the Patriots dynasty could be incredibly compelling. And this would be a big part of it. Right, especially if you could find some people that know some things, what really happened. That's the Deflategate is a great example. What really did happen? Right, there are some people that know exactly what happened.
Sure, and they've been told not, don't say a word.
They haven't said anything. Right.
Right. Oh yeah, no. So, and I would watch. I mean, I want to know. I think everybody wants to know. At the end of the day, we all want to know the truth. But and I believe. You know, when we sit here and play that, well, you know, on down the line, what if? There will be probably 10, 15 years from now, whether it's still called 30 for 30 or what, there will be a documentary that has the tell-all, because at that point, you're so far removed, nobody cares. Nobody can do anything.
Yeah. When we come back, we'll go into a couple other things going on. There has been a tweet regarding Jadeveon Clowney. Hey, another tweet now. Does it really have any meat to it? We will tell you what it is. You can decide for yourself. Also, we want to get into a tweet from Tom Pelissero from yesterday's NFLPA memo about just the logistics of playing football when you're a big guy, right? And you're colliding with other big guys on every play. You know, logistically, football might have challenges that nobody else has. We'll tell you about that when we come back as well. Stay tuned. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game. Moving on here on Darren Donick and Chase. Talking a little NFL this hour. Some of the issues. Talking Patriots, Cam Newton, taking away another draft pick with the penalties. And, of course, you know, continuing to maneuver through and gather through workouts. By the end of the month, you hope, and I guess we're still in June, but by the end of July, about a month from now, you hope that training camp can start on time, dealing with a lot of issues. Let's start with, though, the tweet that we mentioned going into the break. Josina Anderson has had a conversation with Jadeveon Clowney. Would you like to share that, Chase?
Yeah, because I was reading through this and thought this was interesting. So she just tweeted this out. Just got off the phone with free agent defensive end Jadeveon Clowney. He told me at this time he intends to sign with the team, quote, before the season starts if everything still goes on time with the season. Clowney also added, no, I have not narrowed down a final team. I'm still open. So that's interesting that he shares that with Josina Anderson. But the key phrase in all of this, at this time. That right there, that line is something to pay attention to. Because if he doesn't sign before the season starts, people go, well, he said he was going to sign. He said he was going to sign. What happened? No, he said at this time. He is, I think he's being smart in that sense because he doesn't know what's going to change. Neither do I. We don't know what's going to change. None of us do. What's going to happen as things move forward with this coronavirus. So, interesting nugget in that he hasn't narrowed it down to a final team. So, we'll see. Are the Titans still in the running? That's what we don't know.
The other thing, I mean, this is all we have to go off of, right? So we can interpret this in so many ways, but I think part of the interpretation for me is, you know, I've made it this far. Let's see what happens in the next few weeks anyway. And, you know, who knows if they'll even start training camp on time at this rate, right? And there's no push right now. There's nothing he's really going to gain from signing.
Right.
So he might be willing to take this way deep into the off season. I mean, maybe well into training camp. Now, before the season starts, you know, that could mean a week before the first game, right? That's still before the season starts. I don't know if in his mind he's meaning more right as training camp starts, but I'd love to know what's going on in his mind that way. But, you know, you leave yourself open in that. So I don't know what we really get from that other than I think he is content to play the waiting game. That's the impression I got from Don Graziano anyway.
Yeah, and that's kind of been where he's been at throughout this whole process, is he's willing to play the waiting game. He's not in any rush. He knows that there's not the only off-season programs are virtual. There, you know, he doesn't have to worry about being in a practice or what have you. So I understand all that, but so I believe he looks at it as, okay, if training camp's open on time, then it's game on, because I can get in early with a training camp, get my contract, learn whatever system it is, and be good to go. And if you think about that process for a second, he says he hasn't narrowed it down, but I don't buy that. I believe it could be between two teams. He knows what Seattle's doing, so that would be easy. And for the most part, he knows the system here with the Titans because he's played in it before. He knows he's familiar with where Vrabel came from. So I think one of those two teams, it could be down to that. It's going to be whichever, you know, whatever the best contract is. I at this point, he's not striking me as the type that he's going to sign with, okay, I have the best chance to win a championship. It's all about give me the best chance to win, but also pay me my money. That's kind of how I think he's looking at it.
Yeah, but that's, you know, the pay me my money, I don't know what will change things. You know, I guess Dan had some theories, but I just still, when you start really hearing who's out there, I don't know what's really going to change to where somebody just coughs up huge money, unless it's for 1 year. You know, for 1 year, as we've said many times before, I might pay a little extra to get him in-house for 1 year. You know, multiple years at big bucks, I don't know what's going to change there. You know, I guess an injury could change things for some teams, but still, a lot of the money is allocated right now, right? So it's risky on his part. But for him and Logan Ryan in particular, this waiting game, it's got to be tough for those guys for sure.
Yeah. No, it is, but at the same time, it's a different world in which we live. I believe, and we've said this over and over again, if things were normal, if this were a normal offseason, I think there's a good chance they're both on teams, and we're not having this conversation, that rosters, you know, the 90-man rosters at least, are set, and you know the direction that teams are going to go, but these aren't normal times, so that's just something that players and teams are having to deal with. And so you have two talented individuals in Jadeveon Clowney and Logan Ryan that are sitting out there looking for work. And they're going to get it once training camp opens, once teams can bring them in and work them out and you know, see what they got left. But Logan Ryan's the one that, and that's why I brought him up with Dan. Logan Ryan's the one that I am surprised. Clowney, I'm not as much surprised because of the injury concerns, and you want to see him. But Logan Ryan is somebody that I am concerned, or not concerned, but surprised that he's not on a team, that he didn't get signed. That tells me what Dan said, that he priced himself out, and we've discussed that, of just how big of a deal that's been. But just have to see.
We will see. When we come back, I want to bring up something about just the dynamic of football and how the virus could play into it, and that is the big guys. Big guys up front. We'll talk about it when we come back. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase here on 102.5 The Game. Final segment of this noon hour. Don't forget, we'll talk a little hoops at the 1 o'clock hour, a little hockey as well in the final hour of the program. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe hanging out with you. Glad all of you are with us. We got the sun out here on the east side now. The rain has gone through. I hope it's
out here on the west side, too.
Where you are as well. All right. Good to see. Maybe an afternoon of activity here. It's always good to stay healthy, get outside, get some fresh air, move around. Speaking of that, yesterday the NFLPA put out a memo, and this was something that was brought up by Tom Pelissero on Twitter. That I think is certainly something that I've thought about, right? We know that in terms of what we've learned about the virus, that people who are obese, by definition, are at a higher risk of being affected adversely by the virus. So I have wondered, you know, these are great athletes that play NFL football, but these are big guys, right? And the CDC... This is according to Pelissero. The CDC defines obesity as body mass index of 30 plus. Now, I don't know all the particulars of what that means, but it's basically saying that even if you're this big, strong, healthy athlete, if you're carrying that weight, you know, you could be interpreted, I guess, as obese. I've just wondered that, right? So a big offensive lineman that works hard to keep that weight on, we've admired so many former linemen and how they've slimmed down and altered their body type when their careers are over, right? Brad Hopkins being one that we know very well. We've talked to him about it. But I do wonder, that's got to be going through your mind, right? When your job is to be big and strong and have a lot of mass and strength, and you're going through a collision, you know, face-to-face with another player on every play, the logistics of that have got to bring up questions.
Yeah, no, I haven't thought about that. I mean, this is another one of those examples of something that I haven't necessarily thought about, and then it gets brought up and it makes you think of, okay, so what kind of effects will that have? So I think it's an interesting question that, it, quite frankly, I don't have an answer to. But that's also a part of, okay, well, do you want to, like, what happens if we find out? You know, do you want to find out, or is there more testing, or there, you know, how can we find out some of these answers, I guess, is the question. So,
I don't pretend to know the answers right now. It just seems like that would be, wow, something I would be thinking about a lot.
Sure.
And I know that there are health experts that have brought that to everybody's attention. You hope that there's a way through it. You hope that, by and large, these are really top-level athletes. These are not unhealthy guys. You cannot not be in great shape if you're going to play this game, right, even with the weight that you're carrying. But it does add a dimension to it, right, that maybe really on two fronts, just the size that you are. But I would love to hear from a health expert that how would you define a 300-pound offensive lineman. Would you define that offensive lineman as obese by definition? And what does that mean? It's certainly different than people that are just sitting around eating cheeseburgers all day that, you know, are unnecessarily, you know, they're without purpose gaining all that weight, right? There's very different ways of looking at that, right? But I would wonder what team doctors and trainers are thinking about that aspect of it. And then the other front, besides just being that big, is what you do on every play when you're an offensive or defensive lineman. You know, it's not social distancing. It's the furthest thing from it, right? Every play, you're right up there face-to-face, breathing, hitting each other, pushing each other around, that's tough. That's tough to think about.
Yeah, because and therein lies the other part of the risk that these players are going to assume, you know, when they hit the field. And, you know, this is a part of as they sit there and they weigh their options and they talk to their families and they go, okay, well, is this a risk that I want to assume as we try to return to play? You know, and they can go and meet with their doctor and decide, you know, maybe for you this is not what you want to do. But it's a whole other element to this story of returning to play with football and the things that the teams and the league and the players are going to have to discuss as they learn more information.
And then there's, of course, the game, the dynamics of the game. These dynamics exist on all levels of football, right? Bigger guys on the college level, bigger guys on the high school level. And, for example, here's another tweet I'm looking at right now from Ross Dellinger. Morehouse College just decided to cancel the football season, right? And basically saying, this is what the AD said. We can't, or at least I'm not smart enough to know how we can. Every AD needs to look at this. We're only in the training portion. How can we go forward with a season and think we won't accelerate transmission? That's the president of Morehouse, I guess, saying that right there. Now, what is different about Morehouse? You know, Morehouse is playing football. You know, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Alabama are playing football. It's the same game. It's the same dynamics. Now, what's different? The money, right? The what's at stake, right? If Morehouse doesn't play football, it's extremely disappointing for the coaches and players and everybody around that program. But that's a much smaller group of people than if Alabama were to stop, come to that same conclusion. There's so much more money at stake, et cetera. So I would guess probably Morehouse is not going to be the last program to say, you know what, we're just going to put it aside for this year. Let's just wait. It's just not worth it to risk what's happening. But that's a.
But I want to go back
out of the woods, right? We're all so hopeful and so determined, right, to have these games. And believe me, I'm not calling for them to cancel it by any stretch. I want to see it, you know. But you have to try to put aside your determination and your will, and ask yourself, you know, can you pull this off? And this Morehouse president is saying, I just don't think we can do it.
Right. Well, something else you brought up with this, the high school programs, that's how I really want to see how they handle it. And they're going to pay attention to, you know, what other levels find out about this. But, you know, there's risk for everybody, but professional athletes
But football with big guys and the way the game is so tightly close together, right? It's, to me, it's different than baseball. It's different than soccer. It's different than even volleyball. Right. Or golf for sure. Like every sport's a little different. Hockey is sort of in between, right? There is a lot of clustering that happens from time to time, but it's not with the frequency of football, and you don't have as big a guys in there. So these are challenges that maybe football has that's a little more unique than other sports. But that's just my thought, and I'm by no means a health expert.
Yeah. No, but what I'm saying is, like, professional athletes have more of a choice because they're making millions of dollars, so they have more of a choice to take the risk, whereas high school and college players, I mean, they don't. So I think – and you're also, like, a high school player that's a 15, 16, 17-year-old kid that you don't want to put in that position. So I think it creates a different conversation about all this as well.
Am I seeing this as we start to wrap up the hour, Chase, that the SEC media days there's been another change in that? I know, you know, obviously we're not going to go down there, to Atlanta the way we were originally scheduled, but are they still planning on doing it virtually? Or are they pushing that back now?
It would appear.
John Talty of Alabama.com, AL.com.
Yeah, I just saw this.
The league's upcoming media days have been pushed back and won't take place on July 13th through 16th. They note the SEC network has removed coverage of the 2020 media days event from the network's broadcast schedule.
Yeah,
no date has been set.
Huh. It looks like, it just looks like it's going to be postponed. They were going to go virtual, and now it's just postponed altogether. SEC Media Days, while no official decision has been made, could be pushed back to end of July or early August. Hmm. That is interesting. Huh. Kind of makes you wonder, when you see things like that, what does that mean for the season? Because if you're pushing it back that late, you're usually in camp. So that kind of makes you wonder there.
I do wonder, with all this we're talking about, Chase, if we will have a new movement to push the season altogether, the college season, back to the spring, which is something we kicked around as probably as early as March, right? April, when we were just all of these theories, right? We were all at the very beginning talking about what could happen. And I think everybody got into a mode of trying to get the season going on time, and I still think we're going to try to exhaust that if possible. And to me, there would be nothing wrong with doing this, but I do think it's plausible that you just come to a conclusion, we're much better off trying to play this in the spring, in February. Maybe a lot more good can happen. By then, we'll know a lot more, et cetera. I don't know. I mean, maybe things don't change that much from September to February, but maybe they do. Maybe you got to take that chance. I don't know. I just wonder.
Oh, I think it's going to be more of a discussion because it's going to be, we may know more. We'll know more. I'm not saying necessarily we have a vaccine, but we could know more about this and have a better handle on it. And so that could get more people on board to, hey, let's just push it back, see what happens with some of the return to sports on the professional ranks, and then go from there. And you might, at that point, you might learn, we can go from we're unsure of how many fans we can have in the stands to, you can probably have half capacity. So there's
a better chance of having that. Yeah, a much better chance of having a lot more fans in the stands, or a much better chance of completing the season rather than maybe taking the risk of some teams just can't play the whole season. Then that is something to consider. We'll come back to that. Obviously, we have plenty of time to tackle it. That would be tough to stomach for sure, not having a football season during football season. But that
be
may
weird.
Be the better
but people
alternative.
People will still watch in the spring.
Oh, no doubt about it. Stay tuned. We're going to turn the attention to the NBA and the bubble and what's going on there. And how about this? J.R. Smith and LeBron James are back together. Can you imagine that? We'll discuss when we come back. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.